The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, we're on to International Holocaust Remembrance Day. And actually in Israel, this is really kind of a non-event because obviously we have our own
What I wanted to ask you. You know, we have a view here at Chai that obviously we talk about it, we focus on it, but it doesn't change sort of the tone, the music. It doesn't change the focus necessarily of the day. Is that matched by what goes on in Israel today?
Yeah, it is pretty much matched. But I think we also need to be sensitive to this day. And the reason is because this is a day that the international community has set aside. This is not us of our own accord within our own family, as it were. This has come from people from outside of the family. And so when people from outside of the family respect things that have happened within the family, I think we have an obligation to give some respect to that as well, to show the international community some recognition for the fact that they prepared to recognize this day, particularly in this day and age where there is still so much denial, and in this day and age where people really don't learn much, don't really know much about the Holocaust because it's going further and further back in history. Fewer and fewer survivors, fewer and fewer people to actually talk about the horrors of what happened during that period. And so the fact that the international community, the United Nations in particular, has designated this day, I think is something that we need to be cautious to respect because we do want them to have a day like this, even if it doesn't quite coincide with the day that we've designated. But it's important that there is such a day and that within the international community, they recognize it. Of course, this is the day that corresponds to the freeing of the Auschwitz death camp, the liberation of Auschwitz. And that's why this day has effectively been designated as Holocaust Remembrance Day. Our day that we mark in Israel and that many Jews around the world choose to mark as well, which is during the week after Pesach, is the day that commemorates the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, which happened just after Pesach. And so there is a different significance because the liberation of Auschwitz involved the international forces, it involved international community. That was something almost that came from outside. And so in a sense, one can understand why the international community would want to use that day. From our perspective, the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising was very much from within the family and something that marks some of the bravery that continued to go on during those very, very dark days when people had lost hope and had lost a lot of motivation to live and couldn't see their way out of a situation. And yet there were people who were willing to stand up and fight against the oppressors, even though the hope the fight seemed completely hopeless, but there were people who were willing to do it who were very, very brave. Many lives were saved as a result of Jewish bravery, which seemed really ridiculous. David versus Goliath situation where people had no possibility to succeed, and yet lives were saved through individual acts of bravery. And I think that that's one of the things, A, that often gets forgotten because we are often likened to going like sheep to the slaughter, and that term has been used a lot, and I think we need to try to fight against that to signify how much bravery did go on during those times, which seemed to be a lost hope. And also because we want to try to present things in a slightly different light, that, you know, we fought, some lives were saved, and from those lives, we've continued to fight to build what we have today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Beautifully said. IDF Chief of General Staff Aviv Kochavi has warned about making any compromises with the Iranian nuclear program. Obviously, this is a particular concern right now, given the new Biden administration, and no one seems quite sure where it is going. But clearly, Israel is very worried about this.
Well, this is a concern, absolutely, and it's tied into a few things. First of all, there is concern about who the Biden administration will appoint to represent them in the negotiations with Iran, whether the Biden administration will even be willing to enter into direct negotiations with Iran is another concern. Israel feels that having distanced itself from that Iran agreement, that the United States should continue to adopt that approach and keep the most stringent of sanctions that have been imposed upon Iran. They should be maintained going forward, even during the Biden administration period. But the issue for Aviv Kochavi is that he has a military role rather than a political role. And he said it quite clearly when he was addressing the Institute for National Security Studies at the annual conference. And he said that Iran could be only weeks away from a nuclear bomb in the event that they were allowed to continue in the current way to develop advanced centrifuges and to continue to enrich uranium. Now, having seen the United States leave that agreement and impose sanctions on Iran, that effectively was a green light for the Iranian government to restart the entire nuclear program, which hadn't really been properly shut down according to the way that the agreement had envisaged. So even though they entered into the agreement with the P5+1 countries and all those countries were adhering to their side of the bargain by allowing economic trade with Iran, and there were numerous compromises that were envisaged within that agreement, in return for which Iran had promised not to advance the nuclear bomb program or advance the nuclear, the enrichment of uranium program, which would enable them to produce a nuclear missile. They did so just behind the scenes. And in fact, the International Atomic Energy Agency was the one official body amongst many who actually formally agreed that Iran was not sticking to its side of the agreement. So under those circumstances, one would say it's a very good thing that the United States said, if you guys are not going to stick to the agreement, we are also not going to stick to our side of the agreement, and imposed a whole raft of sanctions on Iran in order to try to cripple them economically. From anecdotal evidence, it seems as if though much of that effect has really taken the Iranian economy to a very negative place as a result of those US sanctions. However, all of the other countries continue to operate like nothing happened. And now that we've got Joe Biden in the White House, there is concern that the US may lift the sanctions and may allow Iran to even greater leniencies much greater ease in developing this this nuclear weapon, which we are really, really afraid of. And even if everybody had stuck to their side of the deal, the Iranians and the international community alike, Iran in the year 2030 would have been free to go ahead and develop a nuclear weapon. This was one of the major concerns that was voiced by the Netanyahu government at the time that President Obama entered into this agreement. Now, we're not sure where things are going. Aviv Kochavi has said that he's ordered operational plans to be ready to strike Iran's nuclear program if necessary, but whether or not to use those plans and under what circumstances is effectively a decision for the political echelon to take, not for him, that he simply needs to be ready to go when the politicians say now is the time to go. And in parallel with that, and quite interestingly, the Chief of General Staff has requested an additional 3 billion shekels of budget from the government in order to finance a possible attack on Iran. And he's not making any bones about it. He's not saying we need this 3 billion shekels to protect, the oil platforms, hiding it away so that nobody knows really where that money's going to. He's saying it loud and clear. We need 3 billion shekels in order to finance a possible attack on Iran. So that's a word that's going out loud and clear, that the IDF are ready to attack Iran should it be required. And now with the new Biden administration in place, there is much greater concern that this attack may be nearer than it was before.
Do you think it's a genuine thing, or do you think it's just a message both to Iran and to the United States?
This is a clear public message. There's no doubt about that. But I think it would be very, very dangerous to send a message like this without having any force behind it, without any having any teeth that can go along with that. I think it would take a massive decision, a really massive decision, to carry out a military attack against Iran. Having said that, we've seen Israel attacking Iran in so many other different ways, which doesn't really raise the flag up the flagpole in the way that a massive military attack would, such as cyber attacks, such as taking out key people within the administration, hits on certain nuclear scientists. We've seen that over the years. It's been an ongoing theme. Israel has been accused numerous times of attacking people who are involved with the Iranian nuclear program. There's never, ever been any proof brought in order to support those claims. I'm sure that those kind of attacks will still continue. All of a sudden, there'll be some sort of a cyber attack on some key nuclear facility within Iran. Again, I'm sure we'll hear about that in the near future. But a full-blown military attack is much more difficult to see. I have no doubt, though, that the IDF have a way of carrying this out should they need to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. IDF soldier managed to defend, to fend off a terrorist who tried to stab them yesterday. Tell us about this incident.
Yeah, so this was an incident that took place near to Ariel, which is a Jewish town which is beyond the Green Line. We had the discussion about the Green Line the other day. So this is one of those Jewish towns that is beyond the Green Line. It's quite a large town and certainly one which has been discussed to stay within Israel should there be an agreement to set up a Palestinian state. Ariel is certainly one of the places that would undoubtedly continue to be connected to Israel under any constellation moving forward. And these IDF soldiers were guarding the Gitit Avishar junction, which is near to Ariel in this area of Samaria. And all of a sudden, a young Palestinian man apparently approached a lady soldier, a female soldier, whose name has been published in some newspapers and in other newspapers. Her name has been withheld for publication. But we do understand that she is a lone soldier from the UK who's serving actually in the unit, in the search and rescue unit. That's her real job. But on this occasion was doing guard duty near to Ariel when this young man approached her and apparently then came back at her with a knife, trying to stab her. And she maintained her presence and she maintained her senses and she tried to knock him back with her weapon. And while she was doing that, her commanding officer who was nearby shot the man. Apparently the man was killed. In that particular incident, the incident that terrorists who tried to attack her, but she is quite safe. She was uninjured in the incident, as was her commander, whose name certainly hasn't been published, in any of the newspapers that I've read. But this is just another incident, another example of what the IDF soldiers have to put up with on a daily basis while they're simply doing guard duty at what seems to be an innocent junction in order just to maintain the peace in the area.
Absolutely terrible. Really, really awful. Finally, a positive story to end on, and that is that Israel has opened the embassy offices in the UAE, as well as Morocco, actually.
And in Morocco, this week has been a very significant week for opening of Israeli embassies. The Morocco embassy is really just a reopening of what used to be the Israeli representative office in Rabat. And that's good news. It happened within the last day or two. And on Sunday this week, a representative office was opened in Dubai in Abu Dhabi, in order to represent Israel's interests in the United Arab Emirates. We already know that the normalization agreements have been signed, and so this is just a natural flow on from those normalization agreements. There is also a lot of talk about the King of Morocco paying a visit to Israel, even possibly within the next few weeks, once the airport reopens. There is some discussion about whether the King would potentially serve Prime Minister Netanyahu's election campaign if he was to visit Israel at this time. And I think there is some Moroccan sensitivity to the possibility that he should only visit after the election has taken place rather than before in order to stay out of the whole electioneering process. And that discussion has not yet been finalized, but we do know the Israeli government is very, very eager. Prime Minister Netanyahu in particular is very, very eager to see the King of Morocco visiting Israel within the next few weeks. And of course, the office in Abu Dhabi is, while it's now an official Israeli embassy office, we know that there's been an Israeli representative office in the United Arab Emirates already for many, many years under the radar without anybody really knowing about it, but with the silent consent of both governments. So this is now just a way of officially opening the office and putting the sign up rather than keeping it under wraps.
Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, it's just gone 8 o'clock. That is your Israel Report. We chat to Anthony every day, Monday to Thursday at this time.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.